What's up, comic book fans? Pete here from Comic Books Transformed, where we talk about your favorite comic book adaptations from our beloved comics into streaming shows and movies. There are a shit ton of streaming shows right now, but right now, Brian and I, my co-host with the most, are covering Gen V, Loki, and Doom Patrol. Brian, out of all of those three, I know you haven't seen Doom Patrol, but out of Loki and Gen V, which one are you the most excited to talk about?
Well, being that I haven't seen Doom Patrol yet, I'm going to say Gen V.
Gen V. Okay. That's interesting because you said dealer's choice, and I actually chose Loki.
Yes.
So we're going to do Loki real quick. And then in another episode, you guys can tune into, we're going to cover Gen V episode 6.
So let's talk about hopefully Doom Patrol when I actually get HBO Max back and watch it.
Oh, yes. And for those of you that are watching home versus the podcast, it might look like I have blood on my hands. I didn't murder any of my family members. I actually just went to a haunted house thing, like a kind of extended haunted house thing last night called Scare for a Cure. I did bathe afterwards, but you just can't get it out of like your hands, apparently.
That's a lot of blood.
Dude, I was Harry, you know?
Oh, you cut out a little bit there. Say it again.
I said I was soaked. I look like Carrie.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when, which I'm actually going to see again next week, Evil Dead the Musical.
Yeah.
If you're in the first two rows, it's called the splatter zone, and they throw little bags of, like, you know, red corn syrup at you.
That is awesome. Yeah. I'm jealous. I kind of always wanted to go to that.
It comes around every year. It always in different cities. There probably is one near you, but
probably. Well, what shirt are you wearing today, too? By the way.
Oh, this is a Ninja Turtle shirt.
Nice.
The Shredding. It's Leonardo and the Shredder's breaking through, like, you know, the Shining.
That is fantastic. Where'd you get that one?
I think this was Ripped Apparel.
Okay. That is cool. Yeah. I love when they blend the two, especially if it's like a horror in one of our things that we.
Yes.
That's like my two YouTube channels in one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to Loki. Loki episode 3. And this one is, it's finally bringing us up to the scene that we saw at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And I have to say that this episode, I felt like it was very different in the way that it was directed. It seemed like much more lively, and there were a lot of these like sort of like tracking shots where characters walking around in this sort of like old Chicago town.
And I do have to say, I love the sets in this show.
Yeah. So it's 1893. That's where the majority of the action took place, and it was directed by Dan DeLeu. It's his last name spelled DeLeeuw. And he was a digital effects supervisor on movies like The Mask, Crimson Tide, The Rock, Armageddon. So like a lot of like big, big budget sci-fi or genre movies. And then, you know, he's done work on MCU movies and stuff too. He's a second unit director. He was second unit director on Avengers Endgame, Eternals, and Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Okay.
Yeah. So, my man, you picked Gen V over this one. Did you enjoy this episode?
No.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I don't want to say I didn't enjoy it. It felt a little long. It felt like they kind of retread themselves a bit.
Okay.
And I'm utterly confused about the goals of the characters.
Okay.
I understand Sylvie. Sylvie wants to kill any of the Kang variants. I totally get that. That makes sense.
Okay.
I get that Loki and Mobius want to get the loom fixed so, you know, all of reality doesn't get destroyed. I get that. I don't understand what's up with Renslayer and Ms. Minutes? I mean, I guess Ms. Minutes just wants a body and to sleep with Kang.
Yeah.
Weird turn.
Yes.
But it sounds like Renslayer wants the same thing as Loki and Mobius to me. They want him to fix the loom, but I just don't get it. I felt there was too, they just retread themselves a few too many times this episode, you know, just, oh, now they're with Kang. And I mean, Victor Timely, oh, no, they're with them. And it's just, it was, I don't know. It felt overly long. I felt like they could have gotten to the point a little faster. I don't think the length added to the episode. I did appreciate the, you know, those, the sets and the tracking shots, all that stuff. And I guess I was a little confused. I was expecting different based on seeing that scene at the end of Ant-Man. Compared to in the show, because, you know, I just imagined this was going to be some kind of menacing version of Kang. And he's kind of like a con man, and he's got like a stutter. And I guess I got tired of the stutter, honestly. Like, I don't think it was like super well done or believable, I guess. And I don't know. I guess I just expected something different. And also, much like between the first and the, maybe not as badly as the first and the second episode, but the episode seemed to start abruptly. Like, we missed something again, you know?
Yes. I do agree with that too. I'm trying to think. We do start off with the TVA, right? Before they go to Chicago, I think.
I think that the first thing we see is Renslayer and Ms. Minutes appearing in the older Chicago, right? Or am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. That in itself is where I get the most confused, because I think, let's make sure we're on the same page. So the idea is that there was only He Who Remains left after a war with Kangs, where essentially all of these Kangs in different timelines kind of rose to power and then fought with each other for dominance. And He Who Remains essentially won and was the only Kang, right? So far, we're on the same page, right?
Yeah.
Then if you killed him, essentially all of the timelines would kind of return, and there'd be all these different Kangs per timeline. And we would speculate all the time of like, well, who is Kang? Like, where does he come from? And the assumption was that he was like a descendant of maybe like Reed Richards, or maybe even like T'Challa or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so far we're on the same page. But now the implication is that Kang is Victor Timely, who's a man that was around like the 1800s, I guess, the end of the 1800s in Chicago.
Yes.
So this is the part that always bothers me. Whenever they do time travel, and it's like Terminator 2, where it's like Cyberdyne wouldn't exist, or Skynet wouldn't exist if the Terminator hadn't gone back in time and gotten its arm, you know, crushed or knocked off or whatever. Like, then you would never have Cyberdyne. But then it's like, how did it exist in the first place? It's like that kind of shit.
It's a time paradox, chicken and the egg kind of thing. Yeah. Essentially, they're saying that He Remains had his own plan to have someone drop off the TVA manual that the show says Ouroboros wrote, but they also imply that Kang created all this stuff there. So I'm confused by that.
Yeah.
But he essentially had someone drop off his own stuff to himself earlier in his life, so he could go down this path. They also do point out when they're showing the years that they're going into, that it is the sacred timeline. So I feel like that's an important detail to keep on there. It's just like, you know, otherwise you're thinking like, well, why this one, you know?
That's a very, very good point. So the implication is that this Kang would eventually become He Who Remains, right?
I guess, but like you said, it's a paradox, because, you know, who knows what would have happened if he didn't have that, if Renslayer didn't drop off that manual through the window in his youth.
Yeah. Because the idea is that, like, the sacred timeline, I would assume that means that that's the timeline that Kang is from, like that, or the He Who Remains is from.
That's a great question. I don't know if they've properly explained that, but I mean, that's, we've always just assumed that that's the one that was. So,
right.
You know, we didn't really question it.
Cause what if it's something sort of like more optimistic? Like, what if the sacred timeline is a timeline that Kang chose because like that's maybe the only altruistic Kang, or like the only good Kang, you know?
Yeah.
You know what an Ouroboros is?
Yeah, it's the like the snake eating itself kind of thing, the infinite loop sort of thing.
Yeah. So I feel like that in itself is a metaphor for a paradox, right?
Yeah, very true.
So you don't think this? You don't think that like maybe Marvel is trying to think of, okay, how do we replace Jonathan Majors, and maybe we should have Ki Hui Trang or whatever become the new Kang? You don't believe that, right?
No way.
Okay.
I can't believe him as a villain.
Yeah, that's true. But you saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, right?
Yes.
You remember when he's like all serious and they're at that movie premiere?
Yeah.
I thought he did a good job as like a serious guy.
I don't know. Yes, you're absolutely right. But still, I guess maybe I don't want him to be a villain.
Yeah. True. I don't want him to be a villain either. Yeah. He's so charming as Ouroboros. Yeah. So, all right. So then let's talk about what actually happens in this freaking episode. Ravonna gives like a young boy Kang a TVA handbook, and essentially he studies it, and he, you know, grows up to be this sort of con man that has all these ideas, all these inventions in his head. And you said that the stuttering got on your nerves, but I thought that kind of the stuttering, he had a lot of it in the show that he put on, but then when he was talking later on, it wasn't really there.
No, I think it was still there to an extent there. And I mean, it wasn't, I guess it wasn't bad, but I found it a little distracting. And again, it wasn't what I was expecting after, you know, how that scene was presented in the end of, at the end of Ant-Man.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. Good point. Yeah, you know, it's a testament to Jonathan Majors' acting career, right? Or acting ability, because he's like real menacing in Quantumania. And then in this, he's sort of goofy and fun.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So I also agree with you that like it felt like they sort of had the same setup a couple of different times and they just kind of retread a lot. It's weird when like Sylvie walks in and it's like, oh, she's so serious, she's gonna kill him, and then she doesn't kill anybody, you know? Like it, when you play that card, you really need her to like kill someone off if you're gonna do it twice.
And that's another thing too, like they could have solved this episode, could have been solved in so many easier ways. I mean, not good storytelling ways, but it just seems unbelievable that they would all just stand there and talk when they all have these goals and they're just standing there kind of talking, you know?
Right.
I didn't believe Sylvie was going to kill anybody. That was a problem, I think, to me.
Oh, yeah. Which then makes it like, okay, well, you're just essentially just showing up, you know, to have like a plot point or to like move the plot along, but you're not really going to do the thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like they all have like time control devices, and two of them are gods that have powers. And, you know, they could easily do like a special thing with their powers, but all they would do is like kind of just pick up Kang and throw him, or like do like a little blast. And, you know, yeah. I think that the parts that I liked were actually when they're at the fair and like Loki's kind of walking around with Mobius and they have a little bit of back and forth. And I liked when he bumped into the guy and the guy's like, oh, let's take this outside. And then like Loki just made him appear outside.
In the cage, yeah, that was a good gag, yeah.
Yeah. And I liked like when he found the statues of the Norse mythology characters, and then like they had Baldur, which, do you think that's sort of like a little reference, like, oh, Baldur's going to become a character in the MCU?
Well, I think it was a reference to a character that never was. There was always all these rumors that it was always that Baldur was going to appear in the Thor movies. I don't remember which one, but he was supposed to be played by Daniel Craig.
Wait, for real?
Which he denies, if I'm not mistaken, but other people that have, other actors in the MCU have said otherwise.
Really? Okay.
So I don't know why that fell through. I mean, I guess, you know, they kind of had Heimdall fill like a dual role of being Heimdall and Baldur, really.
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't even know about the Daniel Craig thing. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, sometimes people make these like fan art pictures of MCU shows and stuff. They try to like trick us into thinking like, here's the trailer for this season. And they had a picture of Thor, but like as if Thor was on the Loki show. Like Chris Hemsworth isn't supposed to show up in this season, right?
I don't think so, but he did apparently actually make those frog noises in the first season.
Oh, okay.
I think that's kind of the best we're going to get here for something like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like how this moved the plot forward. Essentially, it got Victor Timely from the Sacred Timeline to the TVA, and then Ravonna brought Sylvie brought Ravonna and Miss Minutes to the end of the of time.
I would say she dumped them there, but yeah.
Do you think they're going to do something? Do you think that's the end of them for this season? What do you think's going to happen there?
100% no. So in regards to that, there's the kind of left in that cliffhanger, actually. You know, it's like Miss Minutes says to Ravonna, like, oh, I have a secret that I haven't told you yet about you and Kang, but it's going to make you really angry. So this is 100%. I mean, they're absolutely coming back to that at some point. Okay. There's no way they're going to just leave them there. And then I guess there's that questionable decision of, you know, do you bring Victor Timely to the TVA? Is that a mistake? Is it your only option, I guess?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be more plot driving than the other thing, most likely. The other thing I really wanted to pick up, I wanted to talk about was, you know, they kind of hammered home subtly in a way, but that Victor is not a fan of partnerships. So, you know, he gives his demonstration of his loom, time loom thing. It looked like to me like it broke.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yeah. But this one dude's like, yeah, I want to be your partner. I don't want to just, you know, whatever. And he's like, I don't do partnerships.
Yeah.
Then later on, it seems, you know, Ravonna's currently with Victor. They're kind of on running away, trying to go back to his lab. They seem to be getting a little romantic in a sense.
Yes, I agree.
And then she says the partner word. And then next thing we know is Ravonna's getting dropped off in a lifeboat off the ferry.
Right.
Then later on, the partner word wasn't mentioned when Miss Minutes gets a little creepy and she's like, you know, I want a body and, you know, I want to be your girl and all that. He kind of turns on her again because it's insinuating partner, you know? And I want to know what's going on there, essentially.
Yeah. So that kind of built into the idea that, like, the Kangs fight amongst themselves, right? They're all the same person and they could all work together if they wanted to, but they choose to fight amongst themselves. So it kind of plays into that, right?
Yes.
But then, like, you know, obviously I think, like, from a storytelling point of view, if someone is so against, like, teaming up with other people, that I would assume that, like, they've teamed up with someone in the past and it's burned them.
Yeah, that's, but I want to know who or what, or and it has to be relevant somehow.
Mephisto. You know,
like... Yes.
Teamed up with Mephisto.
It's always the answer.
Yes. I don't know.
Victor Timely, and that's why he doesn't want a partner.
Yeah. I mean, it might be. I mean, the thing is, right, is that Marvel always does this thing where it kind of like goes up to the line when it starts to talk about like real things, real serious issues that are in the world. And it gives you like a little hint of like, see, look, this exists, racism exists. But then it just like jumps away and it doesn't reference it again. And in this episode, you have a man who's an African-American in 1893 in front of a crowd of people talking about science. And the audience did kind of gasp when he showed up, but you could easily write that off of, it's just a man and they put a spotlight on him, so they're going to gasp. But you could also say, well, because it's African-American man commanding their presence, that's why they would gasp. Then there's the guy that says boy, which is derogatory towards African-Americans of that time, or just in general. So, you know, race obviously is a thing, and they kind of do this thing where it's like racism is a problem, but it also isn't, you know, and versus. So like it would be extremely interesting subject matter if they were to deal with the idea of like, this is a character from a time when his own people, his ethnicity, his identity is used against him, and that influences who he is as a character. But I don't think Disney is going to even touch that.
So racism creates Kang.
Well, universes.
I don't know if that's. I can imagine some people having some kind of knee jerk about, you know, white guilt and all that.
Right.
So they probably danced around something like that. But I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, they. I think they were trying to say like, yeah, there's, you know, racism exists, but they didn't go too deep into it. I actually, when the first scene when you see Ravonna show up in 1863, somebody walks by and like looks at her like,
yeah.
Like, What the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you dressed like that or whatever? Or what are you doing here?
Right.
I thought that was the clearest sign of racism in the episode to me.
Right.
But again, it's like, hey, it's there, but we have other things to go on, and we're not going to get too political here.
That's exactly what's happening there. It's like that's kind of the extent of what they're going to do. And I mean, I think there's something to it that like Ravonna is cast by. I'm not sure if she's American or not, but obviously she's, you know, a woman of color and you know, she's Ravonna and then he's Victor Timely Kang or whatever. So it's interesting. Like they have that bond and they do seem like they're going to get romantic and then he's not interested, but I don't think Disney's going to go much further with that. But what is interesting about like the Disney Plus shows and Marvel, when you saw this fair in Chicago, right? Didn't you kind of get Iron Man 2 vibes and like that fair that they have?
Yeah.
And so it kind of felt like Kang or Victor Timely was sort of like the proto World's Fair, proto Tony Stark kind of, or Howard Stark kind of thing, right? Yeah. And then, you know, in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you have the guy who was the first Captain America, but he was African American who got the serum too.
Yes. Oh my God, I forgot his name. Bradley.
Bradley. That sounds right. Yeah, Patriot's like grandfather.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, Brian, I didn't realize this, but the actor that played him, is the guy that played Mantis, like in the Mantis TV show. Do you remember that?
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew. You're talking about? Oh my God, Carl Lumbly, right?
Yes.
I know that voice as Martian Manhunter.
Okay. Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay. So he's Martian Manhunter. He's Isaiah Bradley. He's Mantis from that Fox TV show.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? He's also right now on the show Fall of the House of Usher. And that's why I was able to make that connection. Yeah. So, you know, we're kind of talking about all this different stuff with Kang, and we started talking about race and stuff like that. And you think that Ravonna is going to escape from the end of time and play a part, but do you think that this Victor Timely is going to become like the main Kang, who's like the protagonist of the Kang Dynasty movie?
It's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's not exactly clear who the villain is here. I wouldn't also be, I mean, yes, it's possible that he may become the prime Kang or whatever. But it also may be that that's what they want the audience to expect, and they're not going to do that. I'm not sure if the main villain here is Kang, is Ravonna, or I actually think the most likely candidate is Miss Minutes.
Yes.
I think that is going to be the villain of this season, whether or not we consider the other, you know, if the others become more villainous later or they figure threat later. I think that the enemy is going to be Miss Minutes.
Okay.
Ultimately, in the season.
Okay. I you're probably right. And that's cool. I like that because she has such power. But I think that, like, they keep talking about Kang's aura, which I guess is kind of like the equivalent of a person's soul or something like that. And I kind of feel like since he's at the TVA now at the end of this episode, that in the next episode, they're going to trust him. He's going to be, like, on awe of the TVA. But then towards the end of the second – or the next episode, he's going to be, like, oh, and he's going to like touch something and then all of a sudden he's going to be able to control some stuff and then he's going to like take over and then that episode's going to be about like getting the power back from him.
Or he's going to find some like secret room that only he can unlock also or something. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's
a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, it does seem like Miss Minutes could be the potential big bad of the season. do you think that there's any of this that's going to connect to the other MCU stuff that like they're going to introduce or like kind of tie into?
I think this is all like precursor to Secret Wars. That's it. Okay. I don't know when we're actually going to see Kang next. It seems to me they're not changing their plans with the character, as some people like to report. We know this was filmed before all these like things came out about Jonathan Majors, so that we knew that wasn't most likely was not going to change.
Okay.
But you know, we're out of the writer's strike now. We're not out of the actor strike, so there's still kind of a delay with things. So things still could change.
Yeah, I did think about that when I was watching this. I was like, okay, well, you know, this is pre kind of his scandal. When they go forward to have him be like this figurehead of this franchise, are there going to be actors and stuff that don't want to work with him based upon the accusations that have been put on him?
I'm sure that they probably have some like, because this is Disney and a major corporation, blah, 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 that they have some kind of clauses in their contracts that says like, hey, you got to do this or we're going to fire you.
Yeah. You sent me a clip last night and I was actually kind of intrigued because it had some really awesome rap in it. Well, I sound like so fucking old and white saying that, but like, it's a great like fucking song. I was digging it. And it was David Diggs. And then it was the guy that was X5, right?
Yes. And that's why I sent it. So Chris, my wife, Kristen, caught up with the show yesterday and she's like, oh my God, I know this guy. I know this from this. And she showed me, and she had shown me before, but I just did not connect the two dots. And I also thought it was very interesting that, the one guy's name is Rafael Casal, and he's doing the song with David Diggs. So he is in the show. He's X5. He's Brad Wolf. He's Zaniac. And then David Diggs was rumored, or is maybe he still is rumored to be Ben Grimm.
Oh,
which I find very interesting.
Okay.
I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
I also read some really like out there theory that I think would be kind of cool that, they were setting up that Kang was Reed.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like they were going to twist the normal comic book canon and say that Jonathan Majors was actually going to be Reed Richards, and that's all going to be.
Whoa.
Kang is going to spin out of that, but that's why they've been so coy about not announcing those actors.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
But I do feel that's kind of out there, and again, maybe that was a thing, and maybe it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll keep him as a villain now and not a hero because maybe they can deal with him. You know. An abusive person as a villain, but not as a hero.
Yeah. Dude, you're bringing all this stuff that I haven't even heard of. I didn't know the Daniel Craig thing. I didn't know the Jonathan Majors as fucking Reed Richards. I did not know that.
That was an article I read. I think it was from Polygon. I don't remember the author's name. I'll send it to you later. But he basically surmised that the big plan was to reveal that, you know, I mean, because Kang is Nathaniel Richards. We know he's a descendant of Reed Richards in the comics. But they were going to change it a little bit and make it a little more direct, I think.
Okay. And I actually would enjoy and like the idea of like this is like some kind of special bloodline where like these men are like exceptionally brilliant and they're all kind of from the same bloodline. Not that they have like special powers because they're bloodline, but they're just like these brilliant men, and that you go from like Victor Timely, who's like maybe the grandfather or great grandfather to Reed Richards, then like Reed Richards is the great grandfather to Kang. Like I would dig all that. I would dig if like Victor Timely was the great grandfather to Reed Richards, then he's Kang. I would dig all that kind of shit if they do it well. But with that being said, last week did we talk about how there doesn't seem to be interest in the Marvels? Did we talk about that on the show?
Okay.
So, you know, obviously there's been a lot more like naysaying and people have been like chomping at the bit to always be like, see, Marvel's going to fail. Here's the proof. Marvel's failing. Like they love that shit. Yeah. And the two things that I've heard the most consistently is that the Marvels is set to have this like disappointing opening weekend. And the other thing that I've heard is that people are not interested in being in that Fantastic Four movie. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that recently, but I've heard it before. Yeah. And I totally get it too. I mean, there, on one hand, I do find it kind of hard to kind of translate the Fantastic Four, which is a very family oriented comic, into an exciting kind of thing that would fit into the MCU. Clearly they've made two attempts at it before, and they really struck out bad last time.
Yes.
You know, I think at the time, maybe we'd say this anyway about the originals, which I'm pretty sure we saw together, at least Rise of the Silver Surfer. But, you know, at the time I was like, well, this is cool. This is, you know, Fantastic Four on in a movie. But I think there's a more pressure to get it to a big property to save the MCU, sort of, and to get butts in seats. And I think people are wary because they've struck out twice before. It seems a little risky because it's supposed to be family oriented, you know? And they could try and make it darker and more science fiction and all that. But I can definitely see that being an issue, as well as just these contracts. I think people are afraid of these contracts of appearing 9-10 times.
Really, really good point, because I think that like when the MCU was fresh and interesting and like everyone was so excited about it, the idea of signing on for like a decade of movies or like 10 movies, you know, that's exciting to people. It's like guaranteed employment and you're making a ton of money. But I think that we've heard some horror stories about like how you have to keep your body in shape. Like, have you ever heard the fucking thing of like Chris Pratt had to drink like his age in glasses of water per day?
No. That sounds dangerous.
Yes. Like, to be as cut as he was for Star-Lord, he had to drink like, I don't know, like 40 something glasses of water per day.
That sounds contradictory to me, because I remember when like the Witcher was first coming out, like, I remember Henry Cavill saying something about like he would deprive himself of water because then the water like leaves your body and then your muscles look more defined because there's no water around them.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. That sounds a little extreme and maybe made up.
Probably. I know.
And you know, we could also tie all these things together too. It's just, you know, everyone seems to think that comic movies and superhero movies are a sinking ship, and nobody wants to stake their career on when it's going to flop, you know?
Right.
So that could have implications for the rest of their life.
Very good point. Yeah. You don't want to be the one that's like coming to the party late and then that's when like it gets shut down. Yeah. Good point. So do you want to say anything else about this episode of Loki?
No, I'm good.
You're good. Okay. Well, this is fun. And I think we kind of went in some different directions I wasn't expecting today. And I actually enjoyed those better than what we could have talked about. So I appreciate that. Yeah. So this is where I'm going to act like we're ending this episode so we can start the next one. So this will be a little weird. But this is me and Brian saying goodbye for this episode of Loki. Make sure you guys like and subscribe. We always love to have people commenting on our videos. We will respond to you. We'll be back next week with Loki Season 2, episode 4. There we go. 4. Guys, there's so much fucking content out right now. But make sure you guys are also checking out our Gen V videos, which Brian and I are about to go record next. All right, we'll see y'all then.